We know what you're thinking. I just want jeans that look great, feel great, and hold up. At Ariat, we've been doing some thinking too. We're thinking about fit that moves with you, no matter where the ride takes you. Durability that stands up to hard work, harder play, and comfort that never quits. And all this thinking, it's really just about more living. Now, it's time to stop thinking and start shopping. Find your Ariat jeans at Ariat.com or a retailer near you.
Hi, I'm Mike Dilk, and you're listening to the Relax Back UK show, the show that explores all kinds of health topics relevant to you, your family, and your friends. Each week, I talk to expert guests from a range of backgrounds to inform and entertain you. So please do join the Relax Back UK family and stay tuned.
Hi, and thank you for joining me on the Relax Back UK show. First of all, I'm going to invite you along for the ride. Literally, I'm a bit unfit. And certainly I could lose a kilogram or two, and I've decided to do something about it. And I'm going to start a regime on a fitness bike. I started off with a fitness test on a Watt Bike static bike under the watchful eye of physiologist Eddie Fletcher. And he's come up with an exercise plan for me, and you can join me if you like. Then I talked with Scottish Rugby Union international Rona Lloyd about the future of women's rugby after the recent World Cup.
In the last 2 years, women's rugby has absolutely exploded. It feels like it was getting bigger and bigger year on year, probably for the past 10 years, but it really feels like we're at a turning point in the sport, and hopefully we can keep building on this momentum of the World Cup and keep getting more girls involved in this game, because you can gain so much from participating in rugby.
Also, I was very interested to ask her about life and training as an elite rugby player.
So pre-season, before games start, you'll go through a block that you're training really hard, you're in the gym a lot, you're on the pitch a lot. Yeah, you're feeling like you're going to throw up a lot.
So please do join me for a great show. Thank you.
This show is cool.
So the first step in my fitness regime was to visit Eddie Fletcher, who's a physiologist and works with Watt Bike, who supply static cycles.
So I've just been set up by Eddie on the Watt Bike. What sort of Watt Bike is it, Eddie?
This is the Watt Bike Trainer.
Okay, right. So I've been set up such for my, my geometry. He's made me get the right position with my feet down, my right position with my hands where they are now. And the idea is, I can't quite do it yet, that I can let go and not really change position terribly much. So I'm set up. So thank you very much for that, Eddie. Eddie's going to take me through some other stuff now. I'm not sure how well I'm going to be able to speak at the end of that. So that's why I'm speaking now. So
yes.
Eddie, I'm all yours.
All right. Right. Okay. I just want to show you, before we actually do the test, I want to just see how you pedal as well.
Sure.
And just get you used to the bike, to be honest. I've set your heart rate monitor up. So that's your current heart rate. Quite low.
Goodness.
Very nice.
Yeah,
very nice.
Right. I'll take that.
Combination of the
is it working?
It's working. The test. Just start pedaling for me. The key things we'll be looking at today are your RPMs, your cadence in there,
right?
Your power you're producing,
right?
And what your heart rate is doing as well. Once we get that fully connected.
Yeah. So explain this circle thing.
This thing. So we're looking at how effective you're pedaling. Are you using the muscles in the right way within the legs?
Okay.
This is not bad, actually, to say the least.
Okay.
So what you're looking for, this is the left leg downstroke.
Yeah.
That's your right downstroke going the other way. So this is the, we know, remember we talked in the other room about force in newtons.
Yeah.
That's the newtons. That's you applying the force around the pedal revolution on the bike with the sensor picking up how many newtons you're doing. And then we use, so all of that stuff is down in the gubbins in there, comes up into the box, and the box translates that into power.
Right.
And we get the RPM, and so on and so forth. So don't forget, that power is calculated from the force in newtons, plus the speed of the pedal, plus the distance the pedal travels. So we know all of that is happening. Hundreds of samples a second going in there.
So do I have a readout of power at the moment here?
Yes.
Yep. Which is that?
46 watts.
Okay.
All right.
46 joules per second. Jolly good.
That's your RPM at the moment. We're going to be going a lot higher than that. Now, what we do know is your pedal technique is pretty good. Even at a low RPM, that's very difficult to do.
is it?
Yeah.
Well, that's luck. Yeah. That's not judgment, Eddie.
It's the way your body's built. Some people can, some people can't.
All right.
So I learned that you can measure a lot of information really quite accurately, and it's all very repeatable, which means that you can see if you're improving, which is nice for someone like me, but actually very important for elite athletes. I also asked about the fact that I'm left-footed and wondered if that really makes any difference on the power that I can provide to the bike from my left foot, my left leg, or my right leg.
So what we're doing here, we're having a look at how you're producing the power evenly with each leg. Yeah. Which is why I asked you about injuries, because if you get injuries, yeah, you usually find there's some discrepancy between the two.
So what I'm noticing is the left is slightly higher. I'm actually left-footed and left-handed. Does that make any difference?
People think it does. I haven't found any difference in 30 years.
Okay.
Even with footballers who are left or right footed.
Right.
Because a lot of the activity is both legs, isn't it?
Yeah.
And if you don't have a good balance, and you've got a good balance here, by the way, it will fluctuate. You're looking at it close to that 50-50.
Yeah.
But because of that granularity of data I talked about, 100 samples a second, if you get 50-50, that's coincidence to an extent. It'll fluctuate.
Yes.
And behind the scenes, we're doing 5 decimal places, so there's no chances, really. So, 49, 51, fluctuating across the two. 48, 52 is acceptable. Outside of that range, it probably tells you you've got something wrong with a leg.
Sure.
And it could be a prior injury, or it could be just natural where the muscles are constructed in your particular body. But this is looking pretty good.
All right.
It's fluctuating. We're not doing an awful lot yet. So you've got, this is every pedal revolution, it's Justin. And then this is the average building up. So even now, you're at 48 and 52, which is, acceptable.
Okay.
And if we get that over the whole of the test, then I'll be more than happy, to say the least, because it means we've got one less job to do. We don't have to balance you up in any way, shape or form.
Now, I started the health span check, which is the test to estimate cardiovascular fitness, that's CRF, maximum minute power, that's the amount of power that I can put into the machine, and maximum heart rate. And I did this all under Eddie's watchful eyes.
It's a submax test, not going to make you fall off the bike, take you to a certain level, and then the machinery will do the rest of the work that we need to find out.
Excellent.
Find out your training zones, your heart rates, your power zones, and your CRF score. You
can just move
your
score.
Yeah, that's the one.
We'll talk about that later.
Yeah, we will. Okay. Right, it's initialising, we're okay. So I want you to take yourself up to about 73 RPM. Off you go. There we go. Keep it down, 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 down. That's it. Now bring that up again. Bring that up to green. Keep it going. Keep it going. That's it. We use the first 3 minutes just to settle people down. We don't want you to fail the test in the first 3 minutes.
No.
After 3 minutes, it will start to say, if you don't keep close to this, it'll terminate the test. So you've got to be very, very accurate on all of this. Very nice and very easy. All right, so on a scale of 1 to 10, 1 being easy, 10 being very difficult, where do you think you are?
Oh, this is like 2,
yeah,
3,
okay.
I'd say.
I'll go with that. Yeah, I'll go with that. Keep it up there. 110. A bit more. That's it. Because now, if you don't keep it, because we're into that fifth minute now, you've got to keep it fairly close. Otherwise, it will fail you and say, well, you haven't kept it up there. Every minute has to be better than the previous minute.
Right.
It's as simple as that. It's looking good. But you can see how all you need to concentrate on, all I need to concentrate on, is you keeping that power output.
Yeah.
Because all the data is being stored in here.
Yeah.
It's been recorded, and I can look at, we can look at it later on to see what it comes up with.
And again, whether it's just because I'm a beginner, but I am finding I got to watch that line like a hawk.
Yeah, that's all right. It's very good.
So as the test progressed, I had to increase the power I was putting into the machine in stages as dictated by the software until I felt that I was putting in effort that was equivalent to 7 out of 10, where 10 is the maximum that I could do.
It's going to go up again to 120.
Okay, that changeover wasn't too bad.
Yeah, so a scale of 1 to 10, where do you think you are?
Three, same.
Yeah.
Two or three. Maybe three.
Probably
three.
Yeah. And that's the beauty of starting low.
Yeah.
Because it allows the body to build it. But if you start too high, the body reacts against you.
Yeah.
It's a bit like if you're doing a training session, if you go off like a bat out of hell, it's going to hurt you fairly quickly.
Yeah. So I definitely feel like I'm doing something.
Yeah.
But I also feel like I can continue doing it.
And you can talk to me. And that's one of the key things. If you can talk back to me, I know we're okay.
Yeah. I might not be able to sing.
No.
But I can definitely talk to you.
Exactly. Talk to me. Yep. That's okay. It's one of the tests we use to say where you are on the scale. Let's keep it up there. Your heart rate is very steady.
Yeah.
Okay, 130. And we've now got 6 minutes of data, so we've got enough data to play with if we wanted to, but we know you're well off where you should be.
Okay.
So that's, we're not going to terminate it at 6 minutes. You're a long way off as yet. Okay, scale of 1 to 10.
Higher now.
Yeah, what do you think?
Certainly 4.
4? Okay. I'll go with that. I never really tell the rider what I'm thinking in terms of where I think you are.
Yeah.
But 4 is not unreasonable. Yeah.
Maybe approaching 5. 4/5.
Yeah, I'm going to give you 4. You see a little smile on your face, talking to me. That's all pretty good. Scale of 1 to 10.
Definitely approaching 7.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah. Yep. We'll make this final minute, as you say. We're just trying to get some starting metrics for you. So when I stop this, you keep pedaling.
Okay.
I'll take the gear down, the resistance down, so you can just spin your legs out and cool down a bit.
Right.
And I want you to go through the line. We'll go through the line. 20 seconds. Bring it down a bit. Bring it down. That's it. Good. Spot on the average lot, 190.
That's
good. So easy it is to do it.
Yeah.
3, 2, 1, go through the line, go through the line, go through the line. Okay, you just keep bring your cadence down.
Yeah. So that's the end of the test. I went up to 190 watts, I think, was it, Eddie?
It was, at 95 RPM.
Yeah. I definitely felt out of how much it hurt from 1 to 10, I was on a good 7. I'm going nice and gently now, just to warm down, but you can probably hear, you know, I feel like I've done some exercise.
Yeah, you should do.
I can still talk, probably couldn't sing, but yeah, I feel all right. Thank you, Eddie.
While I was still on the bike, pedalling gently just to cool down, Eddie went through the results with me.
Okay, so on the screen already, you can see is the results of that test.
Okay.
Now, what I want to check is your body mass. I'm not convinced you're that heavy.
Okay.
But we'll check that. We'll check that out.
All right.
Because that will dictate some of the score.
Yeah.
Because your CRF score, your VO2 max, which I'll explain later, is linked to your body mass as well. It's per kilogram of body weight. So it's an important metric we need to get right on all of that. All right. So this is the raw result. We've got a max heart rate of 173.
173, okay. Yeah.
And it is an estimate. So it took what you were at.
That's the max that my body would be capable of.
Yes.
Yeah,
yes,
okay.
Yes. If I'd taken you to the top end and you'd fallen off the machine, that's probably where you would be. That's not unreasonable.
Okay.
So it's an estimate. We've also got an estimate of your maximum minute power. That's the power you would have been on if we'd taken you to max. You would have got, so you were on 190. Estimated you would go to 226.
Right.
That would probably be the 230 leg, to be honest, if we did that one.
And this is using all the data that you put in, my age, my height, my weight or weight, and data from this.
It is. Now, this CRF score is 10%. So it's at the very, very bottom end of that scale for a man of your age.
Right.
But also your body mass, because it's body mass related.
Yeah, okay.
So you can improve that greatly by just losing a few kilograms. It's the first thing I say to people.
That's what they all say.
No, that's right, that's right. So you get your VO2 max, that's your body's ability to transport oxygen around the body, is 27.88, which is the 10th percentile of your age group in there.
10th percentile?
Yeah.
Okay, what, at the bottom or the top?
Bottom.
Okay.
Well, but you've got to start somewhere.
Of course, yeah, I get it.
And you can improve, I'll show you on my computer later on, you can improve that markedly, and I mean markedly, just by losing a few kilos.
All right.
it's kilo, it's power per kilo,
yeah.
relative.
Yeah.
So we need to do some. What we can look at is that's your maximum in milliliters. So that's 2.938 liters of oxygen. That's your total ability to transport oxygen. So if you divide your body weight into that, that gives you the score.
So that's milliliters of oxygen that could be in my blood?
Yeah, transporting around the body, yes.
Okay.
Yes. A good measure of relative fitness.
At standard temperature and pressure, presumably.
Yeah. Yes, it is. Yeah. So what we need to do is work on that.
Yeah.
And the first thing I would say to you is, let's lose a few kilos.
There was some question over my weight, and that might affect the result, but essentially my CRF, that's cardiorespiratory fitness, is in the bottom 10%, and I intend to do something about that. Eddie has suggested a What Bike Health Beginner 2 training plan. That's 3 workouts a week, and they go from about 15 minutes to 30 minutes or so each time. You can join me if you like via Insta. I'm going to try and stream that via Instagram, and my Instagram handle is RelaxBackUK. You can download the What Bike app and join in, or just come along and pedal however you fancy on whatever bike you fancy. I will see how I improve over the 13 weeks of this training plan. It was also suggested by Eddie that I need to lose some weight, and I'm going to try and do that. And I must admit, I've been having a glass of wine or a gin and tonic or something on most days. I'm going to try and keep that just to the weekends. I also eat biscuits pretty much every day. I'm going to try and stop doing that. So please do join me and come along for the cycle ride.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
My next guest is Rona Lloyd. She's a rugby international for Scotland. She's a winger. The club she plays for is Sale. And the topic was the World Cup and the future of women's rugby, along with other rugby-related topics. My first question was the World Cup fun?
Was it fun? Was the World Cup fun?
Fun is an understatement. It's funny because when you're in it, I think if you'd asked me day to day there if I was having fun, I might not have said yes in terms of there's the pressure of the tournament, the pressure of performing, of learning game plans. But reflecting now on the whole experience, it was absolutely incredible. I think the support for women's rugby was amazing, playing it, packed out stadiums. The last World Cup was in New Zealand, so my family couldn't be there. For them to be there in the stands supporting me, that was, you know, that meant the world too. So yes, it was absolutely a fantastic experience.
So everybody came to cheer you on, yeah.
Yeah, you know, Scotland had a really good travelling support, which was amazing. I guess we are. This is as close to home as we're ever going to get. So,
and I didn't watch live your try against England, but I watched it yesterday on the highlights, and I got to say that did look fun. And my thought was, you got that try because you look fitter and faster than the players that were trying to defend. They just look absolutely. Wasted. I mean, it was the end of the game. It was a very tiring game, obviously. But you just look like stronger and fitter, and you were always going to score that try, I thought.
Yeah, I think it was the last play of the game. It was the last play of our tournament. So it was one where, you know, I thought, get my head down and give it a crack. And luckily that ended over the try line. Obviously, England went on to play another 2 games and win the tournament, which is a fantastic result for England, but also, I think, for sport in the UK.
Yeah, well, I definitely want to ask you about training and fitness regimes and all that sort of thing. But the actual supposed topic of today is women's rugby. Not supposed, it is what we're going to chat about, is women's rugby and how kind of more popular it's getting. So I thought I'd better do a bit of research. So I found some stats, and apparently 49% of current women's rugby fans, they became fans in the last 2 years. So it's definitely on the up.
Well, and another stat to match that, which Royal London found in their research, was that there was 1% of women playing rugby in 2023 to there's now 11% in 2025. So in the last 2 years, women's rugby has absolutely exploded. It feels like it was getting bigger and bigger year on year, probably for the past 10 years, but it really feels like we're at a turning point in the sport, and hopefully we can keep building on this momentum of the World Cup and keep getting more girls involved in this game, because you can gain so much from participating in rugby.
So you said 11% of women and girls play rugby. That's a massive number.
Yeah, it's huge. It's so exciting. And I think because of kind of these old stereotypes and traditions we've got, I think that's still a surprising statistic. And I hope that, you know, the next 10 years, that's not a surprising statistic. That's, you know, yeah, that makes sense.
I mean, that's got to be more than soccer, hasn't it, than football?
Not quite more than football, but football is another women's sport that the participation levels are just blowing out the water, which is a very exciting time.
Okay. So I guess the big question is this interest going to last? And if so, how? How's that interest going to be made to last?
Well, I think a big bit is going to be investment in the grassroots game. As there's more women competing in rugby, we need the facilities there supporting the game. So that's facilities in terms of, you know, pitches, changing rooms, but also in terms of coaches, coach education, physios. There's so much that goes into making the game happen. So I think that's a big side of it in terms of making sure the infrastructure is there for it to explode. And then I think the other part of it is, let's make women's rugby players household names. Let's keep increasing the exposure. During the World Cup, there was murals of the Red Roses around different cities in the UK. I know up in Edinburgh, they've got the women's players on the trams in Edinburgh. I think all of that gets more eyes on women's rugby. It makes people see, okay, women are here, they're playing rugby, they're competing, and let's get involved in it.
I mean, that's all going to take quite a lot of time and effort at a time when actually some of the men's rugby clubs, they're kind of not doing quite so well financially at the minute, are they?
No, but I think that is where women's rugby can build differently. We're in a professionalisation era now, so let's learn from the mistakes that are made in the men's game and actually find out, okay, how can we invest in women's rugby in a way that is sustainable? And I think that's happening, and I think it's starting at the ground up with investing in the grassroots game and making a clear pathway to compete at the elite level.
Okay, so that means getting people involved young. What else does it mean? Does it mean not paying such huge salaries? Because, I mean, some rugby players, I mean, it's not near the scale of football, but, you know, some male rugby players earn quite a lot of money, don't they?
Well, absolutely. And I think this salaries right now, women's rugby, we're probably at the other end of that spectrum, where actually right now people at the top level of their games are balancing competing internationally with full-time jobs. So I think as that transition happens and salaries come in at the top level, yeah, it is making them sustainable. So we definitely are still at a stage that we want to push for more, but I agree that the current landscape of the men's game evidently is not sustainable with the what we've seen happen in the club game over the past couple of years, with clubs folding and clubs not sustaining teams.
Right. So do you feel like the future's rosy? It's gonna happen this time, and women's rugby is gonna, people are gonna keep interested. Lots of girls are gonna want to take it up, and it's just gonna blossom.
Oh, absolutely. I think it's going to happen, and it's happening right now. We had 82,000 at a sold out Twickenham. In 2 years, there's going to be the first British and Irish Lions women's team. I think events like that are going to keep people involved and keep eyes on the women's game, which is everything we want. And the growth has been so organic in the last couple of years, and I think we're going to continue to see that until, yeah, what we're seeing is the norm.
Okay. You mentioned Lions. Okay. So what is the story there? When and where is the Lions tour going to happen?
Yeah, so Royal London are a big sponsor of the first British and Irish Lions women's tour, which is going to be in 2027. And that is an absolutely historic landmark event. It's like a dream that you never had. Like, I grew up watching the men's British and Irish Lions team, and you didn't dream about playing for the Lions because that didn't exist. So sure, it's really put a new dream on the horizon for so many players, for so many young girls coming through that can now actually have that in their goals. So it's going to be in New Zealand in 2027. New Zealand are currently the third ranked team in the world. England are obviously ranked first at the moment, having just won the World Cup. So the fact that we're going to have, you know, the best of the best from England, Scotland, Wales, Ireland come together to create this super team, I think it's such an exciting time for the sport.
And okay, that's 2 years' time. Are you going to be in the team? I specialise in unfair questions, so I might as well get one in early.
Honestly, a tour like that, it is so who is on form right now. It's going to be five or six games over a summer period. Actually, how you played at the World Cup, I think, is going to have no bearing on your selection on the tour, because especially in rugby, so much can change between now and then. It's going to depend if you're on form at club, if you're on form in the Six Nations before that summer, and it's going to count on keeping injury free. So I'm sure like every rugby player in the country right now, I would absolutely love to have a seat on that tour, but I'm definitely just going to take things season by season, week by week, and yeah, do everything I can to be the best player that I can be. And if that lands me a seat on the Lions tour, incredible. And if not, you can be sure that I will be a massive advocate and supporter of the tour.
I will invite you back on in a few months, and we'll get a running commentary.
We can check in.
Yeah, good luck with it. Okay, so look, rugby is a tough game. There's no getting away from it. So I played when I was at school. I thoroughly loved it. And I moved on to try and play at university. Everyone was just a lot bigger and a lot stronger. And I stopped playing. But it is a tough game. There's no question. So then if my daughter didn't play rugby, but if she did, I just know my wife would be kind of constantly worried about it, about, you know, getting injured. But there have been some rule changes recently, haven't there, to try and reduce the level of injuries. So I'm interested in chatting about those, really, sort of allaying parental fears. What are the rule changes and kind of have they worked in your experience?
Yeah, so I think there's two things there. So I think the first thing is, I know that getting involved in a contact sport can be daunting, especially for people that get involved later in life, if you've never been exposed to that. But I do think rugby comes in so many different forms. You can play rugby union in the winter, you can play sevens in the summer, which has a bit less contact than 15s. If you don't like the contact element, you can play touch. So I do think there's a lot of stepping stones that can get you into rugby union. And the other part of it is that rugby is the safest it has ever been. A lot of the rules that have been brought in are around the tackle height and then concussion protocols. So tackles, they have to be below the hips in the community game. They're extremely strict on that. And that is one way to minimise head contact. And the other one...
When you say community game, you're talking club level, are you? Or
yes, club level, during club level. The rules are all quite regional, but yeah, club level, it's below the hip. I mean, you're not allowed to tackle above the chest at the elite level. So it is safe there too. Yeah. And we've also had gum shields brought in at the elite level, that if your head moves, if you receive a big force or if your head moves in a really quick movement, like a whiplash movement, your gum shield will actually light up. So your gum shield lights up, you're taken off the pitch, you go for a compulsory, I was going to say HIA, that's head injury assessment. Okay. And you're only allowed back on the pitch if an independent doctor clears you to play. So there really are big precautions being taken by World Rugby to make rugby safe as possible.
Is it really obvious? Like, does everyone see?
Yeah, no, it lights up. You can't hide if you've had a head injury. And
if you just stop smiling, don't open your mouth.
Yeah, you would have to keep your mouth closed for as long as possible. But as well as lighting up, the medics on the side of the pitch, it's, you know, Bluetooth, AirPlay, whatever it is, they're informed.
So was everyone wearing these things at the World Cup?
Yep, the World Cup. We've been wearing them for the last 2 years.
Okay.
So they've made a really big difference. And the other bit that's made a difference is World Rugby have increased the time to return to the pitch after a head injury. So if you're deemed concussed, you can only play 7 days later if you pass a bunch of assessments. So parents out there, you can be settled. There's a lot of safe rules in place.
Okay. There's one more. Free kicks have to be a scrum. Is that all the way through, or is that just at club level? So if you're offered, sorry, can't be a scrum, because when you got a free kick, you could have a kick or a scrum, and you have to have a kick now. Is that correct?
Yes. Again, just another way to reduce contact in the game. There were some rules as well that came in from COVID to reduce contact. But yeah, it will vary at the level you're playing at all the way through. All right. But the priority for everybody competing in rugby, I think, is safety.
Yeah, so this has been successful at kind of school and club level. Is it successful at your level as well? You know, are people getting hurt less?
Yeah, there was definitely teething issues when the gum shields first came in, as you would expect with any new technology. But yeah, they've adapted every season. They're getting better with the data from the previous season. And World Rugby are just working to make the game safer year on year.
Safer? Is it as exciting?
Yes, absolutely. The big hits still happen. It's just if you hit your head, you're better looked after.
Okay, all right. The big hits still happen with a grin on your face.
I play the wing. I'm in the position with the least contact, but I think, yeah, any rugby fan will enjoy a big hit.
Good. All right. So let's talk about, I mean, because I know you've been injured, let's talk about life in the elite game at the top level. You have been injured. you had a shoulder injury, is that right?
Yes, had a couple shoulder surgeries, both were quite a long time ago now, but injury, unfortunately, is part and parcel of the game, but that's not exclusive to being a contact sport. It's part and parcel of, you know, football, netball, whatever sport you're competing in, there's going to be injuries.
Sports, for sure.
All sports, yes.
Yeah. And you know, that's because it's tough. You know, you are, you're not sitting at a desk all day, are you?
No, you're pushing your body to the limit. But we do, injuries happen. We do a lot of injury prevention to minimise them. And obviously, even after some shoulder injuries, I made a full return to the pitch.
I would really like to know just a little bit about the training regime of an elite rugby player. I mean, do you kind of run and train every day until you kind of drop and you're just about to vomit because you're so exhausted? How does it work?
Well, that is definitely what pre-season looks like. So pre-season, before games start, you'll go for a block, that you're training really hard, you're in the gym a lot, you're on the pitch a lot. Yeah, you're feeling like you're going to throw up a lot. But
have
once
you must have thrown up.
Oh, yes. Once, the one that sticks in my head was a Christmas Eve session alone on the watt bike when I was sick, and I thought, why am I doing this to myself? There's no one else here. But I think once you get out of that pre-season stage and once you get into playing games every week, it's a physical sport, so your body needs time to recover. So actually, your training load's reduced, but you're going really hard in the game every weekend.
Okay. You mentioned you got an exercise bike. Now, this is interesting because I've just last week got an exercise bike. I can't imagine pushing myself so hard on my own that I actually end up vomiting on it, though.
I could send you some sessions after this call to give a go and then let me know what you think. But whenever we get injured, then you're always... It's not like you get a break from running. You're put on the walk bike, which is, in my opinion, a lot worse than running up and down a pitch.
Really, that's interesting, because part of the reason I got this thing was, so look, I'm a bit older than you. I'm a bit of a physical wreck, but part of the reason I got it was to try and do some exercise, without the continuous pounding on the pavement, and try and do some exercise without completely ruining my body. So I'm in good company then, doing that kind of thing.
Yeah, absolutely. No, it's a lot nicer on your knees, but it's pretty tough on the lungs, which I'm sure you'll discover.
Okay, I'm looking forward to that, I think. So, but training when you're injured, is that kind of left to you, or is there a whole team of physiotherapists and medics on board kind of telling you how to train, and essentially how to live your complete life? Is every part of your life monitored by these people?
Yeah, pretty much is the answer. Pretty much every part of my life is monitored by physios and strength conditioning coaches at the moment. But actually, it's when you do go from competing every day, if you get an injury, it can be really hard to not be at training. So actually, it's really nice to have a plan to follow and have a step-by-step, okay, if I follow these steps, I should be back on the pitch in 6 weeks or 3 months or whatever it is. So it's kind of like a blessing and a curse. It's, you're gutted to not be with your team, but you are still very well supported. And sometimes it's an opportunity to work on other things. If you've got, you know, a lower body injury, you might do a block focusing on upper body strength, for example.
All right. What about everything you eat and stuff like that? Do you have dietitians looking after you? I mean, one thing that makes me ask that question. Okay, so I stopped playing rugby when I was at school, but I know rugby players like a drink or two, don't they? I mean, you celebrate down the bar. When you start playing at elite level, is that all out the window? And, you know, people are peering over your shoulder saying, that's quite enough, Rona. I think we've had a half a pint too much.
No, I think it's everything in moderation. I think everybody's body works differently. And I think it's doing what you have to do to perform at the weekend. There's definitely a time and a place for having a drink. And it's not at all every weekend. But I think at the grassroots level, having a beer together after the game or a Coke or whatever it is, just having that moment together after a game to enjoy each other's company, to enjoy the opposition's company, it's one of the things that make our game so great. And I think a lot of the times having a drink after the game, it's more about bringing a team together than the stereotypes that are associated with rugby of, you know, having 10.
Yeah, no, I agree. I used to really enjoy having a beer with fellow team players and even the opposition sometimes. What about food? Is that closely monitored?
Not closely monitored. We get nutrition talks every season about what we should and shouldn't eat and how best to fuel our body, but again, it is everything in moderation. If we're training a lot during that pre-season time I'm talking about, you're kind of in a situation you can almost eat what you want because you are working so hard and burning so many calories. And yeah, we're really lucky at the elite level that, you know, there's often protein there, so you can have a protein shake after your gym, and there's ways to make sure that you're getting the right calories in.
Okay, excellent. It sounds like it's going very well. I'm excited. I think lots of people are excited about women's rugby. Now, you've just started with a new club, is that right?
Yes, I was playing in Bordeaux in France, but I've just moved to Sail Sharks in Manchester. So, yeah, literally moved in last week, just getting set up, but the club has this amazing family feel, and I was very lucky during the World Cup. I played two games in Manchester, which was my first introduction to the city, and it was so friendly, it was so welcoming, and I'm just so excited to get stuck in, and hopefully this huge momentum that we've seen get behind women's rugby, as you just said, we can keep seeing throughout the PWR season, which is the English Premiership season.
Okay, so you're going to be not training in French anymore. How was your French? I bet you learned a lot of French.
Yeah, I did learn a lot of French. I'd say I speak good French for somebody with a pretty thick Scottish accent. So I loved my time over there. I learned so much. I met so many amazing people. But I'm also very excited to be back in the PWR. I think we say that England has the best league in the world for a reason. It's because the resources, the infrastructure, the crowds, they are the best in the world.
Good. Will you be able to understand the new coaching staff shouting at you in a Mancunian accent as opposed to in French?
You know, we'll see, because I did have some challenges with that in France, you know, halftime huddles. French was hard to understand. Shouty French men was very hard to understand. So, yeah, we'll see how the Mancunian accent goes down.
Good. All right. Well, look, good luck with that. And thank you so much for taking the time to chat. And good luck with the Lions. And do send me some workouts for the exercise bike.
You'll regret asking for that.
I really want them. I want to be able to say that I'm doing the same exercise regime as elite rugby internationals.
Deal.
I'll tell the neighbours that. I'll tell my wife that. I'll tell everyone that.
Okay, that sounds good. Thank you very much.
All right. Many thanks. Thanks.
Thank you. Have a good day. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Thank you very much to my guests on this week's show. And they were Eddie Fletcher, physiologist for Watt Bike, Rona Lloyd, international rugby player with Scotland. And if you do plan to come with me on my exercise bike rides, they're going to be on Tuesday, Thursday and Friday at 12:30. And I'm going to try and stream them on Instagram. My Instagram handle is RelaxBackUK. Thank you for joining me and have a healthy week. Until next week.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. The station that makes you feel good.
Thanks for listening to the Relax Back UK show. Join me, Mike Dilk, again next week for more fascinating interviews and chat. If you're listening to the podcast version, please subscribe, like, and share it with your family and friends. And have a healthy week. Until next week.